With knowledge of what was discussed, Trump expressed frustration with the failure to contain protests, which in many cities turned from peaceful to violent and destructive. He urged the governors to call in the National Guard and said, "If we don't have law and order, we don't have a country." In a particularly testy exchange, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker told Trump the rhetoric coming out of the White House is making it worse. Trump responded that he didn't like Pritzker's rhetoric either. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Former Vice President Joe Biden held his first in-person campaign event in more than 2 months, meeting with faith leaders at an African-American Delaware church. And Pierre Scott Detrow has more from Wilmington on the Democrats' presumptive presidential nominee.
The coronavirus had kept Biden inside his house, relying on digital events and remote interviews since mid-March. That ended with a meeting at Wilmington's Bethel AME Church. Biden listened for more than 40 minutes as about 15 supporters gave him feedback on what he and other leaders could do to improve black lives. Several people criticized the Obama administration for not doing more to lift African Americans economically and said Biden and other Democrats need to take more time to meet with and listen to younger people. Biden said he'd make improving economic opportunities a big part of his administration and that he'd also increase federal oversight of local police departments. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Wilmington.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
A dozen people in an extended care facility in Anchorage have tested positive for COVID-19. Those infected with the virus are a mix of residents and caregivers at the Providence Transitional Care Center, a skilled nursing facility in Anchorage. They're among 27 new Alaskans that state health officials announced had virus on Sunday. It's the largest single-day spike in cases since Alaska first started tracking the spread of the virus in March. During a Sunday press conference, Providence Health and Services Chief Medical Officer Dr. Michael Bernstein said the hospital learned Friday that one resident had developed symptoms, so over the weekend they tested all of the residents and staff in the faculty, in the facility.
We were hoping we could prevent this from happening, but we know that this is a highly transmissible or contagious virus. And the real challenge is that people can be very infectious when they're asymptomatic or before their symptoms develop.
Bernstein said there are a few test results still pending, so the true size of the outbreak should become clearer in the next few days.
So now our work focuses on caring for the residents who are positive, most of whom are fortunately do not have symptoms at this time.
The state's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, said the virus continues to spread through south central Alaska, particularly in the Matsu Borough, Anchorage, and on the Kenai Peninsula. As contract tracers are interviewing people, they've noticed trends, Zink said. People are getting sick after getting together in large numbers.
It's impressive when we see this disease, how sneaky it can be, and it can really spread amongst larger groups of people, 20, 30, 40 people getting together for a celebration, spreading, and then people going to work sick, and then how it can spread from there.
She says it's important for Alaskans to remember to limit the number of people they come in contact with, though it's inevitable that the virus will continue to spread.
We always knew that open never meant over, and as the governor...
Despite the jump, Governor Mike Dunleavy said his administration doesn't plan to change its trajectory in reopening the state fully. This week, his administration plans to end a requirement people traveling into the state quarantine for 14 days. Three new cases of COVID-19 were announced in Bristol Bay in the past week. Two individuals tested positive at the Kamai Health Center's walk-up clinic, according to the health center announcement. These two will not be recorded as positive cases in the Bristol Bay borough because they are not local residents. Third positive test is an out-of-state worker involved with the fishing industry. That individual was at the end of a 14-day quarantine and was isolated within 30 minutes of confirmation from the state lab in Anchorage. Contact investigations are currently underway for the three cases. There are now five confirmed cases of COVID-19 tied to Bristol Bay. First confirmed case was an out-of-state Trident worker. Second was a resident of the Chignik area who tested positive in Anchorage and isolated there. At last week's Borough Island Assembly work session, the Assembly listened to a presentation from the borough clerks concerning mail-in ballot elections for Kodiak. Jared Griffin with KMXD News has this story.
As local municipalities around the state are opting for mail-in ballot elections, for local elections in Kodiak this fall, however, the Kodiak Island Borough does not recommend an entire mail-in ballot election. Borough Deputy Clerk Elise Rice presented to the Assembly why a mail-in ballot election is not feasible for Kodiak. Unless a resident requests an absentee mail-in ballot, and unless borough code is revised, Kodiakans will need to vote in person at their polling site this October. Rice cited several reasons for not implementing a ballot-by-mail election. One reason is the cost of printing multiple ballots for different elections, including borough-wide and service area ballots.
The other couple reasons why I would say that this is not a good idea is we will be looking at printing two borough ballots, one for English and one for Tagalog, because we have such a diverse community. We want to be sure that we're meeting those needs and adhering by those special things in our society or our community. The other, so you're looking at two borough ballots, and then you're also looking at service area ballots. We have five ballots for the service area. So and then you're also looking at ensuring that your borough ballot and your service area ballot go to the correct voter. So then that's another intricacy within that. And then you're looking at three ballots, and then you also have a city ballot that's going to be going out. So that's four ballots.
The complexity of providing multiple ballots for different service areas is compounded with the logistics of printing the ballots and special envelopes. Many Alaska municipalities share the same printer for printing ballots and envelopes, so a mass move to ballot by mail, Rice argues, would put undue burden on the printer.
And so when you start looking at, you have your regular people who normally do it, we ask for our ballots, and then you're also bringing in Matsu and Anchorage and other municipalities that are now asking for these special ballots to be printed, special envelopes to be printed, it's going to put a pretty good burden on that printer. So it's something that in the clerk's office I'm going to be staying in close contact with PrintWorks to ensure that they'll be able to meet our needs for our typical or normal printing for the election.
The question of providing mail-in ballots for all voters has been raised throughout the state as municipalities look for ways to reduce the number of large gatherings of people to mitigate against the COVID-19 pandemic. In March, the Alaska legislature passed a bill authorizing the lieutenant governor to initiate a process for statewide mail-in ballot elections. In a May 15th announcement, though, Lieutenant Governor Meyer indicated that using that authority is not necessary, that the state will follow its usual election process. Lieutenant Governor Meyer did state that the Division of Elections, which the Alaska Lieutenant Governor is charged with leading, will be prepared with mitigation plans for Election Day. At this time, the Kodiak Island Borough, which in its past election saw a voter turnout of only 15%, is recommending no move to a fully mail-in ballot election, even though studies show that mail-in elections increase Democratic participation. According to the MIT Election Lab, increasing voting by mail, or VBM, options for voters increases turnout by at least 10%. VBM brings, quote, marginal voters into the electorate, and by retaining voters who might otherwise drop out of the electorate, unquote. The borough has already seen an increase in requests for absentee mail-in ballots.
by mail applications. We're at 17 so far, which probably does not seem like very many, but at this time last year we had none. Our total count was 35 last year for the entire election for mail by ballot, absentee by mail ballot. So that will, I think it will help also ease the amount of people coming in person to ballot to vote during the election.
As Rice noted, state election officials are counting on that increase in absentee mail-in ballots to decrease the number of voters who show up in person at their polling sites, thereby decreasing the risk of further COVID-19 outbreaks during election season this fall. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
Kodiak residents wishing to vote by mail will need to request and return absentee mail-in ballots by September 29th to the borough clerk's office. You can access these documents on the borough's website or by visiting our website, kmxt.org. Ongoing global protests are rallying against the police killing of George Floyd last week and countless other black Americans before him. In Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau this weekend, hundreds of Alaskans turned out in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, peacefully protesting against institutional racism and injustice. Kodiak joined in on Sunday with a small gathering of five community members. KMXT's Kavitha George has the story.
When Kari Milstein woke up on Sunday, she says she just had to do something. She'd been following the protests in Minneapolis and decided that despite being on a remote island thousands of miles away, she needed to speak out against the, quote, unchecked violence against black people in America. In Kodiak's largely white community, she says it's easy for people to look the other way.
And I think it's easy for people to stay home and no matter what they believe, just kind of keep it to themselves and not really make it known, because they feel like this community is so isolated from the rest of the country that it doesn't really matter what we say, but I think that it does matter.
Milstein gathered a small group of friends and headed out to the main intersection in downtown Kodiak Sunday afternoon, holding a sign that said, "End our silence, stop the violence." The response was mostly positive. Drivers honked and waved in support. But a handful of passerby shook their heads in disagreement, and a few gave the middle finger. Ron Jackson, a tattoo artist in Kodiak, says part of the reason the community is more reticent about police killings of black men like George Floyd is that it can be difficult to see the impacts of that violence in a town where officers generally have a good relationship with the community.
Yeah, it's the constant interaction. So I tattoo the police officers here. I've tattooed the police chief. I've tattooed the last police chief. You're going to see them in Safeway, you know, so whether, no matter what job you have, you're going to encounter them on a personal level. And that's something that we benefit from here, but does also kind of hinder our worldview.
Jackson says he would like to see police held more accountable in incidents like these. It took 4 days for former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin to be charged with murder and arrested. Chauvin was filmed pressing his knee into Floyd's neck on May 25th until the unarmed, handcuffed man suffocated.
If either of us had done what just happened, we would have been taken into custody immediately, not 4 days later. He did not get taken into custody right away, which is insane.
Tyler Barnes is an elementary school teacher in Kodiak. He says being so far removed from the lower 48 can make it difficult for the community to engage in issues of institutional racism.
And I think that a lot of the issues that we're facing now are not issues that we see here. So maybe Kodiak doesn't know how to respond to those types of movements. Kodiak can respond to climate change because it directly affects us. Kodiak can respond to Pebble Mine because it directly affects us. And so I think that what doesn't affect us, we're not quite so sure how to respond to.
Barnes, who is Hispanic, says he feels it's important to show up for other people of color, and specifically black people, who are significantly more likely to be killed by police than any other racial group in America, according to a 2019 study.
The entire United States needs to be here to support each other because we're still forgotten of most of the time, but we are still part of the United States, so we gotta back up our brothers and sisters who are suffering down below.
Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau all held peaceful rallies this weekend, featuring community activist speakers, a moment of silence, and chants urging white protesters and allies of the Black Lives Matter movement to step up to prevent violence against black people. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
Alaska's fishing industry was allocated $50 million in CARES Act funding this month to ease financial losses tied to the COVID-19 pandemic. Commercial and sport fishing businesses that incur more than 35% in losses will be eligible for aid. NOAA Fisheries and the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission will evaluate each entity's spending plan. According to NOAA, submissions and approvals will, quote, occur on a rolling basis, close quote. Additional money could be on the way for the fishing industry. Senator Lisa Murkowski said that she is working to add more fisheries funding in the next round of pandemic relief legislation.
As we think about the impact to our fisheries, $50 million is not going to be sufficient to address the need. I have been working with colleagues and to urge us in this next round of relief to include $1 billion in fishery assistance funds.
Murkowski also wants to change language in the second rollout of funding to help individual fishermen access the Paycheck Protection Program. She said the original PPP did not accommodate fishing wages and crew payroll expenses.
The PPP really didn't account for the fact that so many of our businesses in Alaska are seasonal. And, you know, when you think about the fisheries out there in Bristol Bay, that's certainly a seasonal business. It's the very definition of it. And so we've been successful in changing the definition, but now we're working with Treasury to allow for when those funds need to be paid out.
House of Representatives passed the $3 trillion HEROES Act earlier this month. The bill now moves on to the Senate. Murkowski hopes they can negotiate and address some of the shortcomings from the CARES Act.
We moved this legislation through very, very quickly in a matter of a couple weeks and a couple trillion dollars in spending. It is not unusual that we didn't get the legislation right the first time. It's been frustrating, I know, for many. But we remain pretty vigilant in trying to address the areas where we did not meet the mark, where we underestimated or we built it wrong.
Alaska and Washington both received most of the $300 million made available nationwide to the fishing industry. Halibut and salmon fishing are currently underway around the state, and Bristol Bay's salmon fishery kicks off in June. Two of Alaska's largest seafood companies are merging their salmon processing businesses. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, Icicle Seafoods and Ocean Beauty Seafoods will be combining forces to create OBI Seafoods.
Talks of a potential merger have been circulating for months. There's been speculation in the seafood industry press that the two Seattle-based companies are seeking to remain competitive against the other major industry players in Alaska.
To meet the strength of Trident Seafoods and Silver Bay Seafoods, Icicle and Ocean Beauty really needed to do this.
That's Drew Cherry, editor of IntraFish, which covers the seafood industry. He first reported on a possible deal exactly a year ago. He says it's driven by a big picture trend, more processing plants than fish to fill them.
There's a lot of overcapacity in the Alaska salmon processing sector. It's not exactly a sector that's doing that well right now.
The Icicle and Ocean Beauty Collective Venture will own 10 shoreside processing plants across coastal Alaska. Several are on Bristol Bay, but there are also plants in Cordova, on Kodiak Island, and in Southeast. There have been upgrades to some of the plants in Bristol Bay, says Cherry, who grew up in the region.
But beyond that, a lot of these Alaska salmon facilities, they're not in great shape.
Ocean Beauty CEO Mark Palmer will lead the new venture OBI Seafoods. He says since 2016, the two companies have invested $50 million into their plants and bristles at the suggestion that those operations are falling behind.
So when you drive by a plant and look at it from the outside, it may not look that much different. When you go inside, they're significantly different.
He says the company will redouble its commitment to modernizing its Alaska operations, and this merger will cut costs and allow it to do this.
The ownership group is not going to take dividends out of the Alaska operation. They're going to plow those back in to investments in the plant. So we have a long-term commitment, the ownerships, to build up the plants and modernize them.
The two companies have very different owners. Half of Ocean Beauty is owned by the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. The other half is a small group of outside investors. Icicle, on the other hand, was bought by privately held Canadian giant Cook Seafoods in 2016.
Cook is one of the world's largest salmon farming companies.
Cherry says that creates some natural tension with Alaska's wild salmon industry.
The majority of, I don't want to say majority, but a big chunk of the Alaska salmon processing sector is now partly owned or partly controlled by a major salmon farming company.
Palmer, the CEO, says about half of Cook's sales volume is wild harvest. He says its partners in Bristol Bay raised some concerns, but came to see the natural benefits of a deal.
It's certainly some consternation, you know, in the initial conversations with BBDC being, you know, a Bristol Bay company. But they got past that very quickly, and they recognized that they're partners with a global seafood giant.
It's too early to speculate what the merger will mean for Alaska fishermen and the market price for the catch. Second-generation Southeast fisherman Justin Peeler is a skipper of the 58-foot fishing vessel Defiant out of Sitka. He's been selling to Icicle for more than 15 years.
As an Icicle fisherman, this will be my third merger, if you will. Icicle has bounced around a little bit in that time frame.
He says he's cautiously optimistic the combined company will grow its North American market share. He says Icicle has been a strong company, but has sold much of its fish outside the United States.
We haven't had a large domestic presence, and I'm excited to see that grow. And I think with the merger of the two companies, I think it puts both companies in a position to have that happen.
Not included in the merger are Icicle's two floating processing vessels, the Gordon Jensen and the Northern Victor, which is permanently moored in Dutch Harbor. Those two vessels will continue to operate under Icicle Seafoods. Ocean Beauty will maintain its smoked salmon and distribution network under the name OBS Smoked and Distribution. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Impacts of acid oceans on Alaska salmon. A first ever study aims to find out more after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
We know directly the negative impacts that a warming ocean has on salmon all across Alaska. But what about the other big threat, increased acidity? Extensive studies for years have been underway by Alaska scientists on impacts to major fish and shellfish stocks. But for Alaska salmon, only two studies have been done, both out of state. That's changing with a federally funded multi-year collaborative project underway with Alaska's universities.
These changes are all around us and kind of urge us to think outside the box. What is going to be next? Are our management systems, are they able to adapt to this rapid change in a way that we're not going to lose fisheries?
Toby Schwarer is an economist with the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA Anchorage. He's part of a team that's formally evaluating the risks of ocean acidity to Gulf of Alaska salmon and assessing responses that might be needed to plan and adapt.
The better we can prepare to ocean change, the better we're going to end up managing our resources who are going to need to adapt to that rapid ocean change.
Studies elsewhere have shown that acidity impairs coho salmon's sense of smell and slows pink salmon growth rates. Other impacts remain unknown. Schwarer says new findings could eventually change the way that Alaska salmon fishermen fish.
We know we are having some of the best management practices in the world, but the question is, will they be the best management practices in the future? That's the big question that we want to raise.
He points out that Alaska salmon fleets are contributing to the problem. Increased acidity stems from ocean absorption of carbon dioxide emissions, primarily from fossil fuels. In the race for salmon, average horsepower throughout the entire fleet has doubled. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Currently 50 degrees here on Signal Hill, northeast wind of 15 miles an hour, blowing 10 miles of visibility. Rain in the forecast for this afternoon with a high near 49, east winds 15, gusting as high as 30, 60-80% chance of rain. Rain before 7 p.m. tonight, then showers from 7 to 10, then rain after that. Below around 46, northeast winds 15 to 20, 80% chance of rain. Drops down to 70% for tomorrow. Rain likely before 1 p.m., cloudy with a high near 50, northeast winds 5 to 15, becoming west in the afternoon. It is the 1st of June, 5:18. The sun came up, goes down at 10:59 tonight, 17 hours and 41 minutes of daylight, 2 minutes and 39 second daylight gain. 67 was the high in 1984. The low was 33 in 1968. Big picture, a front will move northward across the Gulf today. A 1,005 millibar north Pacific low will move 260 nautical miles south of Kodiak Wednesday morning. Marmon Island to Sitkanak small craft advisory through tomorrow. East winds 25 knots, 10-foot seas, rain this afternoon. East 20, 10-foot seas, rain tonight. South 15, 11-foot seas, rain tomorrow. Chiniac Bay, east winds 15 knots, 4-foot seas, and rain this afternoon. Northeast 15, 4-foot seas, rain tonight. Northeast 15 becomes south 10 in the afternoon with 3-foot seas and rain tomorrow. Marmot Bay, east 15, 4-foot seas and rain tonight and today. Northeast 15 becoming west 10 in the afternoon with seas of 4 feet down to 2 feet in the afternoon tomorrow. Tides in the Kodiak District, our next one is a low tide at 4:53 this afternoon of 0.74 feet. High tides at 11:28, 8.4 feet, 8.5 feet. On the west side, the tide low tides at 5:40 this afternoon, 1.35 feet at 5:40. Evening high tides just before midnight, about 14.6 feet. Weir report. We have Iakulik saw 54 new sockeye and 5 kings up the Weir yesterday. Grand total of about 1,200 sockeye and 15 chinook. The Litnik, 19 new fish, new sockeye yesterday for a total of 339. Still nothing up the Buskin Weir yesterday. Kodiak City Council will be holding a special meeting tomorrow night at 7:30. Elected officials will be participating via audio-video conferencing, and some in-person public members, though, are encouraged to tune in to KMXT. Members are of the public are encouraged to email comments to clerks@city.kodiak.ak.us or call during the work session, 486-8610. More information, call the city clerk, 486-8636. Bayside Volunteer Fire Department is about to begin their Summer Fire Recruiting Academy June 8th. This 40-hour course teaches the fundamentals of firefighting. Successful candidates have a passion to work with a team, a love of challenges, and an interest in physical fitness. Volunteers may receive many benefits and are paid for with their time training and responding to calls. Those as young as 16 can begin as cadets. If you're interested either in exploring a new career or in community service, drop in to pick up an application packet. Meeting nights are every Monday at 7 o'clock at the station near Abercrombie State Park.